Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
True crime today.
This is the ongoing story of a small Idaho town and its residents, a tightly knit community that hasn't seen a murder since 2015, an environment where one thought they could feel safe and secure until a quadruple homicide stole the lives of four young souls on a mid-November evening, leaving far more questions than answers. Where will the investigation lead and how do we get there? This is the University of Idaho Murders podcast. Four killed for what?
Welcome to the podcast. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download episodes so you don't miss any editions of the show, breaking updates and conversations. My name is Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod. Today's episode over the weekend here is going to be a recap of some of our interviews that we had this week. If you're trying to pay attention to this story, not watching and listening to it every single day, this is a good episode for you because you can kind of get an idea of what the conversation has been about this week in the Brian Koberger case and the murder of the four Idaho students. This is where a lot of the focus was this week. It starts in a courtroom. It was a hearing that had taken place earlier in the week, a hearing that would then set the stage for what's going to happen down the road. Brian Koberger waiving his rights to a speedy preliminary hearing. This is what it sounded like.
Sir, you do understand, and Ms. Taylor has represented here, that she's advised you of your right to have or fully discussed with you the right that you have, which is to have your preliminary hearing within 14 days of the date that you initially appeared before this court. As you recall, when I advised you of your rights, that hearing is a probable cause hearing where the state has to establish that more likely than not, these felony offenses were committed and you are the one that committed the felony offenses. If you waive your right to a speedy preliminary hearing, it does not mean that you're giving up your right to have a preliminary hearing. It simply means that you would not be able to come back and challenge that the state did not present probable cause within 14 days. Do you understand?
Yes.
Have you had enough time to speak with Ms. Taylor about your decision to waive your right to a speedy preliminary hearing?
Yes.
Do you need any additional time to do so?
No.
What this all means, essentially, is that they're going to take their time. The defense is going to have more time. The prosecution is going to have more time to go through all of the evidence. This is not just the stuff that we talked about in the affidavit that was released when Koberger got back to Idaho. This is everything behind the scenes that the public does not know about. There's a gag order in place on the case. So this is where they're going to have that discovery time to try and mount a defense for what at this time, public facing, does look pretty indefensible. But that's not always how things go. Things are not always what they appear. We talked with retired FBI Special Agent Bobby Chacon earlier in the week about just that.
Yeah, I hate to put my head. I'm an attorney as well, but I don't like to put myself in the space of a defense attorney. But I've been there many times on the witness stand where defense attorneys are ripping me apart. I mean, look, the first thing they're going to do is you don't really have anybody, any eyewitness putting him at the scene. Even the one eyewitness that's in the affidavit says he was wearing a ski mask. Yeah. So, you know, bushy eyebrows are not exactly the most reliable form of eyewitness identification.
Sure.
Right. So I think that, you know, they're going to attack that. They're going to try to come up with some theory on how his blood got on that sheath. That's very difficult to do. I'm not saying anything, any of these are going to be prevail. Not any of these are going to be, you know, believed, but a defense attorney has to come up with some defense. So number one, my client was never seen at the scene. That's number one. He was never there. He had that blood on the sheath. They'll come up with some explanation on, you know, why his blood is on that sheath. Now, as we talked earlier, if they have more DNA, you know, the bar of goes higher for them. I think they have a high bar in this. You know, the fact that his cell phone was turned off just during the time the murders were committed almost hurts him.
Yeah.
I know what he was trying to do. Again, an amateurish attempt at hiding his movements, but he left it on his way there. And then as he gets into the area, it's off for the time of the murders, and then magically it turns back on right after the murder. So that blacked out period almost makes it look worse for him, right? So I think they're going to say he wasn't in the area. You have no proof that he was ever in that house. You know, the DNA was, you know, I mean, look, we've seen DNA attack before, you know, way back when, decades ago in the OJ trial, right? DNA was contaminated. It was cross-contaminated. You know, they always say when you can't attack the facts, attack the police. So that's a defense axiom, defense counsel axiom. So they could say it was collected wrong. There was cross-contamination. It's not really his DNA. Whatever else they come up with, they will have DNA experts paid for by the defense to come in and say why that is not a legitimate DNA sample of his or source of DNA of his. I don't know what that is or how they'll try to couch it. But first and foremost, I think they'll say he wasn't at the scene. He's not the bushy eyebrow guy. And then they'll work on having some expert come in and say why that DNA sample is not reliable.
Is that why they would likely have more DNA samples in their back pocket, assuming that would come through at some point of, yeah, you may say this, but what about this underneath fingernails or whatever else they may have?
I think so. But I mean, remember, long before the trial, the government will have to produce all of its evidence in the discovery process.
Sure.
And give it over to the defense. So yep. All of the DNA that they intend to use at trial and all the lab examinations of that DNA will go over to the defense with enough time for the defense to get its own experts to examine those reports and those samples. So so there will be no gotcha moment. They may have held back now a little bit because they just don't want it all out there.
Yep.
But eventually the defense will have access to all that with more than enough time for the defense to kind of get its own experts to review and analyze it itself.
And I think that's an important thing to remember. While the court of public opinion is very quick to judge, and I agree, there's a lot of things here that look very, very damning for Brian Koberger. But even if they are very, very damning, there's a process that needs to play out here correctly so that pieces of evidence, although they may be extremely important, are not dismissed, are not looked over, are not contaminated where they can't be used to prosecute someone who does appear to be quite guilty, but of course still innocent until proven guilty. Defense attorney Ari Schmulein joined us to speak more on that thought.
There's always a defense in any type of case. If you look hard enough, whether it's attacking the DNA, whether it's a mental health avenue, whether it's an incompetency avenue, you got to come up with a defense. Some of the highest paid attorneys in the United States, that's what their job is. That's why they get paid so much. You have to come up with a defense. And it has to be a credible defense, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to make some bogus defense that's going to shoot your client in the foot and you're going to lose all credibility. So it's very important for the defense in this case to really sit down, not jump the gun on giving any statements and find credible issues. And there's going to be a time for Mr. Koberger to give a statement. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a time for the public to see the evidence, and they have to be strategic and methodical about that.
Is there ever situations where there really isn't a defense? Where, yes, you know, you always have to try and find it, but sometimes it just gets so far out there that it's not credible, where you would advise a client at some point of, you go through discovery, the state's got like a pretty ironclad case, there's really not many holes to punch into things, And everything just truly points to the fact that, yes, they did do this, whether they're denying it or not. Is there ever a point where one sits down with a client and says, look, you're going to be found guilty on this? I know there's the Elford plea, and that's sort of an option. But is there ever a case where you would, as a defense attorney, say, they're going to get you no matter what here? Your best defense at this point is just not dying. And you flat out end up having to tell someone that you should plead guilty, and you advise them on that, you know, with a condition of maybe excluding the death penalty or something of that nature, where you're just so far backed into a corner as a defense attorney that there's just no other road.
I think those type of situations do exist, but I don't think it's applicable in this case. And I will explain to you why.
Yeah.
In those cases where you really sit down with that client and you have that conversation, hey, you know, there's solid evidence. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of direct evidence. There's a videotape. There's eyewitnesses, multiple eyewitnesses that see you and identify you, and it's recorded, and you're kind of stuck. And in those cases, I would agree. You need to sit down with your client and say, hey, this is the cost and this is the benefit of going to trial. If we lose, you're facing the death penalty. If we win, this is the best case scenario. Sometimes we do have that conversation. In this case, it seems like the state and the government have a lot of circumstantial evidence that we could poke. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's appropriate at this moment to have that talk with Mr. Kohlberger. But as more evidence comes out and as the state and government turn over more and more evidence, I think that's definitely a conversation that Mr. Kohlberger's defense will probably have with him.
There's a lot of speculation out there about the intelligence of Mr. Kohlberger. In many ways, he looks very intelligent. Many of his professors have flat out said this week he was one of their favorites, if you will, in terms of taking in the material, understanding it. But there is a big difference between a classroom and a real life setting. Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent and chief of counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, joined us to speak on that.
The level of education he had in this area is a great indicator of the difference between education and experience, mm-hmm. knowledge versus wisdom. And what I mean by that is there's a few instances that, and I'm sure there's many more, but the ones that are public really struck me as there's the exact difference we're talking about. And what I mean is, here's an individual that came out of his house and knows because of his education that the cops are going to search his trash. So he puts it in a trash across the street in his neighbor's trash. Mm-hmm. Well, if he had reps in this, if he had experience, he'd know that we're going to get that trash too. Sure. But he didn't. And I think the threat to public safety is if all the methods and techniques that the law enforcement used was to be known, it would empower people to be more knowledgeable that they could subvert that process and system.
I see what you're saying. The techniques, that does make a lot of sense. With that being said, as we, you know, on the outside sit here and try to dissect what kind of individual this was with his behaviors, what sort of person is this? I'm curious to hear your take. I've talked with many people, former FBI agents and such, and many having different opinions on their take on it. Some are going down the incel route, which is kind of what I was saying initially. Now, I'm not even saying necessarily incel in community, but almost just more a way of thinking, a way of his mind working, all the way to, you know, this is a budding serial killer, or maybe is a serial killer. What's your take on what we know about him thus far based on what we know?
In all cases where you have a murderer, each one of them is a wound collector. And what I mean by that is, and I was on a show the other night and they went through some text messaging and some postings that someone they think might have been him had posted back when he was 14 years old. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that this individual was saying was exactly this overlapping theme of he was angry, he was suicidal, no one understands him, he's being cruel to others, he was unemotional, in other words, lack of empathy, and he was just being cruel.
Yeah.
And that And that those are all the signs of someone in crisis that needs immediate medical attention. So my overarching for this entire thing was, no matter what it turns out to be, whether people think he's a budding serial killer or not, or just a murderer, one-time murder, here is someone that had a lot of traumatic things that were going on inside that brain. A good friend of mine, Dr. Chris Mahandy, in his book, Evil Deeds, has a very simple explanation for this. The guy had a broken brain.
However, it is the job of the defense to try and exonerate Mr. Koberger. Many speaking about that, the DNA, what seems to be very damning evidence that's out there, but DNA evidence, not always a 100% slam dunk. Criminal defense attorney Lotta Yuretsian joined us to speak on that.
Sometimes even the damning evidence, including DNA, you may have some way of poking holes in that evidence, because sometimes there are issues, right?
Okay.
And we've had cases before. Years ago, I was a younger attorney at an office, and we had a case, and there was a rape allegation, and they had done DNA testing, and it came back basically, you know, the result was, this is, it's a match for your client. And once we pushed and had them continue that testing and go down the chain, the DNA chain, what they realized was, wait a minute. No, this is not him. Yes, there are some markers here that are common within that ethnic group that individual belongs to. Mm-hmm. But then when you do a deeper dive and a more comprehensive testing, it's pretty obvious it's not a match. So, or there could be other issues. Again, we don't know the details. I wouldn't ignore anything as a defense attorney.
Sure. Knowing what we know and what we did see initially in the case, prior to the FBI being involved in those first handful of days watching the footage of the crime scene, as a defense attorney, and you're seeing that, how contaminated do you think that scene was from what we've known and seen?
My understanding is it was contaminated. My understanding is there were a few individuals that actually came into the place, non-law enforcement. And also law enforcement went in without having covered their shoes. So there's clearly contamination. Now, how much, it's tough for me to tell, but I can see a good defense attorney, and it looks like he's got a very skilled and very capable counsel, will be raising the flags on that issue.
When you look at the case as a defense attorney, if you were to hypothetically say you were representing Brian Koberger, bring us into what those conversations would be like as an attorney to him and advising him. What would you be saying to him at this moment as we begin to enter into the discovery phase before the June 26 hearing?
I mean, you would do what you would typically do with any client. You would sit and have a conversation with your client and understand, first and foremost, what his story is, what happened that day, where he was. Mm-hmm. And assuming the client is saying, I didn't do this, it's not me. Or if he has explanations for some of the evidence, then you start going through each and every piece of the evidence and find out how you explain each and every piece of those, each and every piece from his point of view, all right? And then depending on what he says, if he says, I was seeing, for example, I was in the area 12 times because I work in the area, or I've got a very close friend that I visit, then you get the correct, then you get an investigator and you start corroborating all that evidence. But the first thing is to have a heart-to-heart with your client. And hopefully the client is honest with you and get a lay of the land, figure out what was going on with him, what happened, does he know these people, collect your and gather your information, right? And then based on what he says, figure out what your defense is and start collecting the corroborating evidence and interviewing people, getting your private investigator, your PI, to investigate, to start interviewing people. So there's a lot going on, but the one thing that you have to tell your client is, especially now that he's represented, that you don't talk to anybody about this case. Mm-hmm. You don't talk about the facts of the case, not just law enforcement. That's a given. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But you don't talk about it to family when they call you over the phone when you're an inmate. Everything is being recorded. Mm-hmm. You do not discuss the facts. You ignore all of that. You talk about maybe what's going on in your life. Ask them what's going on in their lives, this and that. But nothing that comes near this case. You don't talk to any of the inmates about the case. Basically, and in court, always try to keep your composure, nothing on your face, no emotions, no outbursts. Basically, quietly follow the case. You want to take notes, take notes. You want to speak to me, but never directly to the court. Everything you have to say, if ever asked anything, first look at me. And only if I nod, then you can answer if it's a yes or a no. Sometimes there's certain things that the courts will ask that he has to respond to. But everything has to go through counsel.
Justice does not necessarily move fast in the United States. June 26th, the next day to the preliminary hearing, which is essentially going to be a mini trial, should take roughly about 5 days, in which both sides will lay out the defense and the prosecution, and the judge will decide if there is enough evidence to take this to trial, in which Koberger can plead guilty or not guilty, or not guilty on a condition. That's where we're going to wrap up this episode and weekly recap of the University of Idaho Murders podcast for Killed for What. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episodes, breaking news, and conversations that we have here. You can get a commercial-free experience through Apple Podcasts. Even try that for 3 days free. So do check that out. My name is Tony Bruschi. You can follow me at TonyBPod on Twitter. Until next time, for all of us here at True Crime Today and the University of Idaho Murders podcast, who are killed for what? Thanks for listening.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio.
Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.